Millions of people have lost weight with personalized plans from Noom, like Evan, who can't stand salads and still lost 50 pounds.
Salads generally for most people are the easy button, right? For me, that wasn't an option. I never really was a salad guy. That's just not who I am. But Noom worked for me.
Get your personalized plan today at Noom.com. Real Noom user compensated to provide their story. In 4 weeks, the typical Noom user can expect to lose 1 to 2 pounds per week. Individual results may vary.
Ryan Reynolds here from Mint Mobile. With the price of just about everything going up during inflation, we thought we'd bring our prices down. So to help us, we brought in a reverse auctioneer, which is apparently a thing.
Mint Mobile Unlimited Premium Wireless. How to get 30, 30, how to get 30, how to get 20, 20, 20, how to get 20, 20, how to get 15, 15, 15, 15, just $15 a month? Sold!
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
Hello, you're listening to the Curiously Specific Book Club, the podcast that's curiously specific about dates and locations in well-known books, presented by Lloyd Shepherd and Tim Wright.
This is part two of our podcast all about Ridley Walker by Russell Hoban. In part one, we spent some time discussing where Hal Fence was and why it wasn't why.
What?
I know. And we also went to Canterbury Cathedral and found the frieze of St Eustace, which was very exciting.
Oh, I enjoyed that.
With the help of some shepherds.
Yeah, and no rights.
And no rights. In part two, we're heading down the hill into the flatlands of Kent. We're going to head east towards Folkestone, following in the trail of Ridley Walker as he walks along the railway line.
Yes. So basically, Ridley jumps out of his farm and goes on a walkabout. He goes to Ashford first, doesn't he? I think
he goes to Burnt Arse Farm or Burnt Arse, which is Ashford.
Yeah, and then he's doing this walkabout in a rather strange route, not the route that I think he really planned. Yeah. But we'll be discussing precisely where he went and how long it took him to get there
and how far he went.
Yeah.
So we're going.
You're going on a long walk, listener.
We're going from Widder's Dump to Rosen to Power, and we're going to end up at Folkestone.
Now, don't forget, if you sign up as a Patreon supporter, one of the perks will be that you never have to wait for part two of any adventure. You can just access it straight away. And we're also offering plenty of other fun extras like maps, so you can actually do these adventures yourself, and videos and show notes, all the links we generate as part of our research. So just go to patreon.com and search for Curiously Specific.
That's enough promotion for now. Let's get out there on the road again. But before we start, I think I'm going to introduce you to my swazzle.
Oh, matron.
You know what my favourite thing about going to Canterbury was?
What was it?
Well, it wasn't going in the cathedral, although that was quite nice.
That was quite nice. The Call the Midwife discovery was quite interesting.
The artwork itself is stunning.
The artwork is amazing and huge.
And also being able to stand on the spot where Thomas à Becket gets stabbed is quite weird.
Yeah.
To know that it's the real play. Again, a specific moment.
Yeah.
Perhaps we should do murder in the cathedral one day.
Oh, yeah. Well.
No, none of that.
What was it then? I got my tenterhooks.
It was the fact that you had actually bought a swazzle stick.
I did bring a swazzle.
And brought it with you.
I did bring a swazzle stick. And
for people who don't know what a swazzle stick is, Lloyd?
Well, a swazzle is a device you put in your mouth if you're doing a Punch and Judy show. So it's probably worth saying quickly that one of the extraordinary themes of the book is the way that Hoban uses Punch and Judy as a way of the government sort of disseminating propaganda to the population. They, you know, the Prime Minister and his number two go around in a fit up, which is the stall that you do a Punch and Judy show in, and they tell the stories they want to tell in the format of Punch and Judy.
Yeah, Mr. Punch is just a big character in this because he's also the devil, isn't he?
Also the devil.
And he's also he's all kinds of things.
He's also a weirdly for Ridley, who finds an old Punch doll in Widder's Dump, he's like an external brain for Ridley. He's a bit like he's very, very shamanistic, of which more later.
Yes, that's a very good point.
That he's the kind of way that Ridley discusses his visions is through the means of this Mr. Punch figure.
It's really weird.
It's
right?
Really weird. It's very good. If you'd like to hear what a swazzle sounds like,
you went above and beyond.
Keep listening.
Do you want to see my swazzle?
I definitely want to see your swazzle.
So swazzle.
Have you had a go with it?
I've tried, but it's like I'm just taking out the envelope now. So it's a weird little thing. It's about the size of a Tim? It's about the size of a piece of chewing gum.
Yes, exactly.
In old money. Yeah. So you have to wet it before you do anything. And it's supposed to sit at the top of your mouth.
Yeah.
I've not been able to make this work, by the way, as an actual swazzle. But
how many times have you tried?
Well, quite a few times. I should point out that it's on a piece of string.
Sitting in your little room trying to work out how to use a swazzle. Was anyone listening? Was your wife listening?
My wife was listening. What are you doing?
Yes, I bet she thought
It's on a piece of string which you have to tie to your chest because you put it at the back of your throat and you try and talk. You have to try and blow and talk through it at the same time. And when you're trying to do it, as I've discovered, you tend to swallow it. So it's on a piece of string so you can yank it out of your throat rather than come to a sticky end.
That's very unpleasant.
So I've not heard of people dying from trying to use a swazzle, but I'm trying to wet
Death
it now.
Death by swazzle.
I'm trying to wet it now. It's essentially, it's a metal, two metal bits of metal either side of a reed.
That's actually not bad. That's the way to do it.
So that's a swazzle.
Do that again, please. I love it. You're getting there.
Yeah, I know, but then when you put it in your mouth, I'm going to put it in my mouth now and try not to die.
Come on.
You can't.
Do you think Russell Hoban knew how to do it?
But did you find anything about Percy Press?
No,
Percy
did you?
Percy Press Senior, I did. So Percy Press Senior is the guy who told Russell Hoban all about Punch and Judy and performed for him twice in Russell Hoban's home.
What?
Yeah, he took his fit up to Russell Hoban's home to perform for it. He was the Punch and Judy man at the White Rock Theatre in Hastings all the way through the 60s and 70s.
So that's where he would have first
so
seen
I'm
him.
So I'm thinking Russell went down to Hastings with the family and saw... Maybe
yes.
Saw Percy Press doing his Punch and Judy show in Hastings.
I think it's quite funny that he came to Britain all Sherlock Holmes'd up and M.R. James ghost story. He ends up in Hastings looking at a Punch and Judy show.
Yeah.
I think that's quite funny.
That is quite good.
I took my little granddaughter to see the Punch and Judy man. Well, she was absolutely made up with it. She sat in the front. She was very taken with it.
I think Punch and Judy was just part of the magic of the seaside. Those 2 weeks of the year when you stepped outside your normal existence.
They see all these things on television, but it's not the same as sitting and watching somebody actually do it.
So there's a song or a poem.
Oh my God, you're not going to sing, are you?
I'm not going to sing this, that is
Thank
repeated
God
a few times. It's called This Full Circle Nine Ways. It's what the kids sing. And it goes, horny boy rung widow's bell, stole his father's ham as well, burnt his arse and forked a stone, done it over, broke a bone, out of good shore, vacked his weight, scratched Sam's itch for number eight, gone to centre next to sea, Cambry coming, three times three. Sharna packs and get the pole when the hardship of Cambry comes out of the hole. Right, so it's basically a spiral of places that ends up on Canterbury.
Yeah, if you didn't think this book was difficult to read before,
you got a good sense. So Horny Boy is Herne Bay. Widow's Bell is Whitstable. Father's Ham is Faversham. Burnt His Arse is Ashford. And Forked a Stone is Folkestone. Done It Over is Dover. Out of Good Shore. What's Good Shore?
Oh, no, I think he means Deal, actually.
Deal, okay. Mm. Sam's Itch is Sandwich.
Yeah.
And then Cambry is Canterbury. So it's basically a spiral of places that kind of come round to Canterbury. And it's sort of the song that he's got in his head, Ridley, when he goes out on walking, as if he's going to do that route, although he's starting in a different place.
Well, isn't it also that every few years that they
take the Archbishop of Canterbury on that...
They do a sort of pilgrimage around that as the circle of power, as it were.
Yeah, yeah. And the Archbishop of Canterbury does come out of the hole in this book because Ridley finds him in a hole. In burnt arse. But Ridley doesn't actually go on that route. He goes on a very different route. And you've been looking at distances.
Yes, he doesn't do the circle.
No,
he doesn't. So, listener, the good news is there is a map at the beginning of this book. In most editions of this book, there is a hand-drawn map. But there is a map. So if you get a map of Kent and you get this map at the front of the book,
yeah,
it might make a bit more sense if you don't know Kent.
That's
one thing to help you.
Yeah. But you've been looking at a real map.
Yes, about how you would go round this. Again, my habit here is to read the book with a sense of when people move and when they stop and when night falls and when day breaks, so that we can get a proper sense of how long this is in real time.
Yeah.
It's about 9 days.
Okay.
It's 9 days long, this journey.
So it starts at Howe Fence and it ends in...
He jumps over there and it... Well, it doesn't end in Goodmanage. He actually ends up in Faversham. Just south of Faversham.
Yeah.
But in the 9 days, he jumps over Howe Fence and then he goes off to Ashford, which is roughly 6 miles from where we're talking about. And then he goes down to Folkestone via the Rose and Power.
Yep.
So if you want to walk from Ashford to the Rose and Power, that's about 10 miles. And then to get down to Folkestone is another 7 to 8 miles. So that's basically he's done 18 miles to get to Folkestone from Ashford, okay?
Mm-hmm.
Then he says he goes back to his birthplace, actually, along the cliffs, which is another 3 miles, 2 to 3 miles. And then they decide to track back to... He decides to go to Canterbury, doesn't he?
He does.
Now, if you want to walk to Canterbury from the cliffs there, it's 17 miles. And then he walks back from Canterbury... Did he go all the way back to Howe Fence at one point?
He does. He goes back to Widder's Dump.
He goes back to Widder's Dump. Now, if you want to walk... Now, this is interesting. If you walk directly to Canterbury, from Canterbury back there, it's 10 miles. But if you go via... If you follow the river and you go via Good Mercy Farm, which he says he does, that's 13 miles. So the point here is that in one day, when the first day he jumps over the fence, he goes from Howe to Ashford, and still on that same day, then he heads down to the Rose and Power.
Mm-hmm.
So he's basically done 24 miles then.
In one day.
Yeah, which is in the rain.
Yeah.
I think that's probably all right. But actually, it talks about the fact that he goes along the cliffs and then goes back to Canterbury all in 24 hours.
Yeah.
So he does another 20 miles... So he does 45 miles in 24 hours.
Yeah.
And he's busy talking and stopping and helping people and chatting
along the way. It's a long way, isn't it? It's a long way.
I think he'd be Ridley Runner, wouldn't he?
No, Ridley Jogger, certainly. Ridley, counting my steps.
Yeah, so there are days in this where he's covering a huge amount of ground.
Huge amount of ground.
There's probably, out of the 9 days... There's 2 days where one day he's doing about 30 miles, another where he's doing about 45 miles. Doesn't mention, no wonder he's fagged. I think they are faggers.
Which is interesting because, you know, Hoban in the afterword says, you know, he was quite careful about locations. He says, sometimes special trips were required, as when I rode on the pillion seat of Richard Holt's motorbike to a forest near Canterbury to ascertain whether I could see my hand in front of my face on a moonlit night. I couldn't. Right, so he is paying attention to things. He said, Ordnance Survey 1 to 25,000 maps were my constant companions. Nautical charts also, which is interesting. So, you know, he was obviously paying quite close attention to distances. But maybe he hasn't quite come up to our standards on this particular occasion.
Well,
unless Ridley had a secret bike that we don't know about.
He does say he likes maps. I think he also likes playing... We know that he plays games with words and what the meanings of things.
Yeah, yeah.
There's no reason why he doesn't just play games with distances as well, to be honest.
Yeah, yeah.
I'm not saying... But also, it's a time in the future. Maybe people could walk faster then. I don't know.
Yeah, well, they walk everywhere, don't they?
I think if he's sitting on the back of a pillion bike, he's got no idea how many miles he's travelling.
That might be true. Okay. Yeah, yeah. I think he's walking across
the
country.
Do you think he's driving the motorhome, or do you think his wife is?
The motorhome? I don't know.
Well, again, I get the feeling that he might be in the passenger seat making notes out the window.
Yeah.
He's got no idea
about
distances.
Far
he's
really
left
going.
All that to his missus.
Mm-hmm. We were walking across a flat field underneath the hills where we're looking back up to the hill where we were earlier. We think this is Withers Dump.
Yes. Down there is Withersdene Hall.
Okay.
So
hence Withers Dump.
Withers Dump. There's Withersdene. So I think that's a dead cert, don't you think?
Yeah.
Withersdene Hall is interesting.
Oh yeah.
Well, it's a rehab place now.
Is it?
Yeah, for drugs and alcohol addiction.
They all smoke dope, don't they? In this
yeah,
place?
Yeah. There's so a lot of dope yeah, smoking. Yeah, yeah, yeah. So
they
that's quite.
They give each other. Now it's hash and Rizzlers, isn't it?
Yeah.
That's the currency.
Yeah, yeah. But so that's what it is now. So if we get a bit tired and emotional, we can always just book in there. But it used to be Y College. And Y College was the School of Agriculture for the University of London, for Imperial.
Oh, really?
Until 2009.
So when he was writing this book, it was a college?
It was. It was Y College. And interestingly, it was a place where they basically did a lot of experimentation on transgenic plants and molecular biology.
Transgenic plants?
Yes, and they had electron microscopes and radiochemicals. And they also had a lot of insects down there they're experimenting on and doing soil analysis.
Oh, okay.
Right, so...
Because one of the reasons they're digging, right, is they're digging for machines that have been buried in the soil over the thousands of years, because that's the only way they can get iron. They can't make iron yet.
That's it.
Right? So we're hunting a thing called St. Eustace's Well.
Yes, you thought this was going to be a surprise.
Yeah, but you found it as well.
Because it's on the map.
Much annoying, because it's on the map,
big
yeah.
Gothic script, yeah. St. Eustace's Well.
Yeah.
But the thing about it is it's not the St. Eustace...
that he saw the stuff about in Canterbury Cathedral.
No.
On the frieze.
He's Eustatius,
yeah.
I believe.
Well, the interesting thing, I think, for me is that... He's got his maps out, Russell Hoban.
Yeah.
And he's, you know, scouting locations. And he picks here, which has got a well called St. Eustace in it. Yeah. Having been inspired by St. Eustace in Canterbury, different St. Eustace. Doesn't really matter it's different. He might not even have known it was different at that time.
Yeah.
But, you know, he's quite into finding connections. Well, the connection man. He's a connection man.
I see what you've done there.
Yeah, it's good, isn't it?
Can I just say, though, that we're standing in the middle of a sort of blasted field
yeah.
with a slight whiff of pig shit,
yeah.
looking up onto the old ridge there,
yeah.
of where there must have been sort of Iron Age
Absolutely.
Encampments.
Yeah, yeah.
And it's quite vibey.
So the kneading bowl's there, right?
Yeah, right, yeah, just over yeah. there. So you've got, it really is a proper, just like the Ridgeway, it's got a massive ridge, and then down
so
here this flat valley.
So fence is over there and over the hill? And that's
yeah,
down the other
and then you would come along the road there and then down to the dump here, yeah. where they're digging up old machinery.
All round here, yeah.
The guy who was the main sort of founder of the agricultural college, there was a guy called Alfred Daniel Hall. He was a dog breeder as well. He's interested in experimenting.
Experimenting on dogs?
Well, you know, of new breeds and all that kind of
so
thing.
So maybe the dog pack are a...
They're Alfred Daniel Halls.
Genetically manipulated.
Alfred from the agricultural
Ooh, that's
college.
Good. That's
they've
good.
Been released from the agricultural college.
And over thousands of years, they've continued to evolve. Oh, that's good.
That might be the vibe.
I have often used maps. When I wrote Ridley Walker, I had a copy of the first ordnance map. I think it was the very first one, which was during the Victorian period. And I also had a put-together composite of the Ordnance Survey maps for the area that I was working in. And I had this up on the wall. It's a big thing. And I also had a chart of the Thames Estuary, which indicated places that I needed to refer to. And I had smaller maps that showed parts of Kent that I was working in. And the maps were always a strong support and a kind of inspiration. As I say, there's this mystique about maps that I have responded to all my life.
We've talked a bit about when this book was written, and we've talked a bit about what Ridley does and actually how he is like he's like a seer or a shaman. He can see things that other people can't see, and he sees visions of things that
he's
might happen.
He's a Riddler.
He's a Riddler, as Ridley Walker, and a Walker. And I found this fantastic interview with Russell Hoban from 2002 with James Hopkin in The Guardian.
He gives good interviews.
He does give good interviews.
There's a very good talk on YouTube he gives to some students. That's excellent as well.
So he talks about having ideas in this interview. When I'm looking for an idea, if I suddenly have a hankering for a particular piece of music, or if I go to a shelf and randomly pick a book, I think, maybe something out there is trying to tell me something. I feel as if I am offering myself and I'm hoping that something will come in. He thinks of this in terms of shamanism. Most of my novels are celebrating a willingness to admit the unseen. And the shaman is open to the unseen and makes himself a medium for it. That's the kind of writer I see myself as.
This makes him very much a 1970s vinyl music listener.
Exactly.
Of allowing it to enter him.
Exactly.
This is Jenison and Pink Floyd all
it,
over,
it is Jenison and Pink Floyd, but
Probably a bit of the Tull.
It's in the air, right, at this sort of time. This stuff about the occult and the weird and the shamans and all this kind of stuff. You might, I don't know if you remember a book that came out in like 1973 called The Occult by Colin Wilson.
You and I had a very different reading history in our early years.
Well, I don't think I read it in 1973 because I was only seven. But I mean, I think I read it later in the 70s, but it was published in 1973. And it was a massive, massive success, this book. It's a big, thick book. It's like 1,500 pages
long.
Yeah,
I was nine. So, that is the kind of book that might have been passed around the dormitory.
Yeah.
But I was having none of it. I was reading very improving literature at that point.
Yeah. Well, it's interesting because I was obviously, I read it as sort of, as being true when I, 78, 79 when I read it. It was like, the world is, everyone has got occult powers.
I think
and can
we
have
were
visions.
Doing Ouija boards in the changing room.
Yeah. Well, this whole book is...
we summoned up Baal at some point.
Well, Wilson says, I came to formulate a theory of the occult that is a natural faculty we all possess but have deliberately got rid of because it would be a nuisance. Right, so there's the idea that you could see visions, you could see what was going to happen, which is what Ridley does. Right?
Yes.
It's very much what Ridley does. Wilson calls it Faculty X, so he gives it a name. It's brilliant. It's really, really good. And when he was researching it, he went and spent some time with Robert Graves in Mallorca. So Robert Graves wrote The White Goddess, which is all about myth and the occult.
He's definitely got Faculty XXX.
Yeah, and if Russell Hoban had not read The White Goddess, I would be amazed, right, because I think it's very much in there. So I think the occult thing is very much in the air, because this book was a massive bestseller. It was huge. And remember, there was all that stuff about the chariots of the gods in the 60s and the Egyptian age and all that kind of stuff.
Yes, I remember that, yeah.
And there was a very famous French book called, I think, The Morning of the Magicians, which came out in the early 60s.
When you say, I think, you've read all this stuff, haven't you?
I've read all this stuff. So I think that's in the air. But the other thing that I wanted to talk about regarding this is alchemy, right? Now, what are they all trying to do in Ridley Walker, right? They're basically trying to make gunpowder.
Yes.
Right? So I'm going to read you a bit from when he's speaking to Granser, who's a character he's an old charcoal burner. Lives by the river. There's lots of references to the one of the three and the three of the one. This in all the songs, the song of the Holy Trinity, right? They're always talking about the three.
Yeah.
Okay, so Granser said, ready with two of the three, ain't we? And been ready this long time and keeping ready until it comes. Never mind how long it takes the charcoal burners. We'll be wearing red and keeping ready. Goodparty said, till what comes, Granser? Granser said, the yellow boy stone, right? So at this point, Goodparly and Ridley have actually got some yellow boy stone. They've got it in Folkestone, and it's sulphur.
Yep.
Okay. Goodparly and me, we both let out our breath at once. Goodparly said, the yellow boy stone. Granser said, that's right, Abel. We've got the other two already. I said, pig shit. Granser said, that's pig shit. Right it is. That's what makes the seed of the red from that's how they make the Saul and Peter. Right. So basically, saltpeter. Right. So
yes.
Sulphur, saltpeter. Saltpeter you basically made by burying... Before we made it artificially, he basically made it by burying animal feces and human feces in a field, and basically crystals of saltpeter would develop.
Yep.
It's basically potassium nitrate.
Yes.
Got that? And then it said, I said, heart of the wood is the charred coal. So they're always going about heart of the wood, and that's actually charred coal. That's the third constituent of gunpowder. Granser said, right you are again, heart of the wood and seed of the burning and heart of the child, which is the charred coal time back and time to come. Goodparly, he were leaning towards Granser. He were listening hard. When he talk it, then his voice sounded like he was still Prime Minister. He said, that's the three of the one, is it? the three of the one, little one is Lilla Boy Stone and Saul and Peter and Charlecoal, right? So there's all this stuff about references to this thing.
Mm-hmm.
And a lot of the language that's used is very much like the language that alchemists used back in the, you know, back in the day to talk about their stuff. And alchemy...
You know about that as well, do you?
Yeah, I know all about that.
You made me walk past John Dee's house once, didn't you, on
the
river?
I did make you walk past John Dee's house, yeah. Vaguely obsessed with this stuff.
Mm.
But Russell Hoban was obviously obsessed with it because he does say on one of the message boards that discuss these books, he does talk about, yeah, I read about alchemy and I read about it from Fulcanelli, right? Do you know who Fulcanelli is?
I have no idea, mate.
Okay, we're going a little bit deep now, but I'm just going to talk a little bit about Fulcanelli.
Excellent.
But Fulcanelli was a French alchemist.
Okay.
Right. Allegedly was alive during the early 20th century.
He either was
well,
or wasn't.
I'll come on to that. Hilariously, the Wikipedia page about him does have the warning at the top. Some of this article's listed sources may not be reliable.
Ah, well, I was about to say about Russell Hoban posting on his own fan site.
Yeah.
Deeply unreliable.
Yeah. Well, sending people the wrong way. So anyway, Fulcanelli was somebody who allegedly turned base metal into gold in a laboratory in Paris in the 1920s.
Allegedly.
His followers all claim that he did.
So hold on a minute. You're saying there's people in the 1920s who believed some guy who said, I can turn stuff into gold.
And they
all believed it.
Yeah, yeah. And he wrote two books.
Have they not read any science books?
Well, one of the people that I read, one of the people that, Fulcanelli's not his real name.
Of course, plot spoiler.
No, right. And somebody claimed that he was like this massive French physicist from the 19th century. So he'd been alive for 100 years.
Oh.
And also this one guy said he also visited him in Spain because he disappeared at the end of the 20s, Fulcanelli.
I bet he just disappeared. With everybody's money, presumably.
And then he allegedly went to visit him in 1953 in a castle in Spain.
Who visited him?
One of his acolytes called Cancellier. Cancellier had known Fulcanelli as an old man in his 80s, but now the master had grown younger and had physically changed in appearance. He was now an androgynous creature, a being Fulcanelli called the Divine Androgene.
Oh, come on.
Yeah. So it's full of stuff like that. But, last thing on this. Hold on a minute.
I like this idea, though, that he'd got some younger person to pretend to be him.
Yeah.
So who is that person?
Well, and also... what's Russell Hoban's relationship to them? He kind of makes out in this thing that he'd spoken to Fulcanelli.
Okay.
Right? So that would be interesting. One final thing on this is that Fulcanelli talks about the phonetic Kabbalah.
Kabbalah,
the phonetic Kabbalah.
You say what you like, mate.
Which is a term for a special use of language drawing on phonetic similarities and other symbolic techniques for expanding the expressive reach of words.
Okay.
It's exactly what Hoban does in Ridley Walker.
In the language.
He makes words mean more than one thing. Yeah, and he does it all, he talks about doing that. He talks about boiling down language such that it means more than one thing. So I think there's a great deal of the occult in this, and I think there's a great deal of Fulcanelli. And so shamans, seers, psychics, and alchemists.
So
it's all in the mix.
People on your side of the podcast rather than mine who grew up reading occult books and listening to heavy metal prog will go along with that.
I love the disapproving tone of voice that you adopted there.
Well, I think it's interesting, isn't it? It's to say that, 1980s is a turning point. Is the 1974 world is your fan base. And then where we actually go in the 1980s is my fan base.
So it's like, we've seen it in our podcast, right? Dark is Rising was very much my book.
Yeah, absolutely.
Eagle Has Landed, very much your book. It's Sven Hassel versus Colin Wilson.
I feel seen.
I might add that there's an article about Eugène Canceldier in an interview which he gave to Le Figaro that is indiscreet. Canceldier is specific that Fulcanelli would have officially disappeared, which for an alchemist doesn't mean he would die, but simply disappear, in 1923. And coincidentally, that very same year, a scholar by the name of Jules Viol disappeared. Viol was a physicist whose work concentrated on solar activity.
A lot can happen in the next 3 years. Like a chatbot may be your new best friend. But what won't change? Needing health insurance. UnitedHealthcare Tri-Term Medical Plans are available for these changing times. Underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, they offer budget-friendly, flexible coverage for people who are in between jobs or missed open enrollment. The plans last nearly 3 years in some states, with access to a nationwide network of doctors and hospitals. So for whatever tomorrow brings, UnitedHealthcare Tri-Term Medical Plans may be for you. Learn more at uh1.com.
Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds. Recently, I asked Mint Mobile's legal team if big wireless companies are allowed to raise prices due to inflation. They said yes. And then when I asked if raising prices technically violates those onerous two-year contracts, they said, what the f*** are you talking about, you insane Hollywood ass f-. So to recap, we're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month. Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
Imagine the softest sheets you've ever felt. Now imagine them getting even softer over time. That's what you'll feel with Boll & Branch's organic cotton sheets. In a recent customer survey, 96% replied that Boll & Branch sheets get softer with every wash. So start getting your best night's sleep in sheets that get softer and softer for years to come. And you can try their sheets with a 30-night guarantee, plus 15% off your first order with code BUTTERY. So head to bollandbranch.com today. Exclusions apply. See site for details.
Hey there, it's Michelle Norris. I'm host of a podcast called Your Mama's Kitchen. When I travel, I'm usually looking for a way to find a taste of home when I'm not at home. And one of the things I love to do when I am at home is entertain. And Airbnb allows me to do that. When I was in California recently, I rented a house that had a great kitchen. And when we were sitting around the table, we're all thinking, we're in someone else's house. Someone could be in all of our homes as well. If you have a home, but you're not always at home, you have an Airbnb. Your home might be worth more than you think. Find out how much at airbnb.com/host.
By then, we'd come off the A20. We were on what they call the iron track, though there ain't no iron to it. Only sometimes in the summer, you'll see red dust coming up. I put Listener over my shoulder and forked off the track and looking for some shelter. Come the next lightning flash, I seen a old stone ruin. I know it the place, they call it Rose and Power. It been from well before time back, way back. It were mostly just a jumble of stones, been dug out here and there for sheltering one time and another.
Okay.
Here we are.
So, we are standing outside Westernhanger Castle.
Westernhanger Castle.
Which is actually an old fortified manor house.
Why is it called the Stone and Power then?
Well, according to Ridley Walker annotations, so there is a legend which says that Rosamund Clifford, Henry II's unfortunate mistress, lived here, and one of the two surviving towers is known as Fair Rosamund's Bower.
Fair Rosamund's Bower.
Rose and Power.
Rose and Power. Gotcha.
Rosamund Bower. Yeah, yeah.
The thing is, again, they built inside it is a rather glamorous country pad that looks like, what do you think, 1930s?
Yeah.
Brick.
Yeah.
Built inside it.
Yeah.
They
do weddings.
Lovely lands.
And they seem to have an old galley ship.
Just as a garden feature.
A garden feature.
So whoever lives here is fairly well lined, I'd say.
But the thing I like most about it is because we part. It's the station, the Folkestone railway line,
yep.
Which is the line that Ridley would have been walking down with Listener, runs directly along here. So if he was walking east to west towards Folkestone, no, west to east towards Folkestone, he would have passed this on his right.
Yes.
But you get a real sense for the railway line along here that it would have been like a track. I mean, like a walking track. Because it's kind of got embankments on both sides.
So you're buying this, aren't you?
I'm totally buying it.
I'm sort of buying it. I mean, there's only two things that worry me. One is it's yet another site where he sort of talked about the post-apocalyptic vision of it all being ruinous and smelly and terrible.
Yeah.
When you get here, it's really lovely.
Okay.
Everything he predicts is going to be awful. It's actually quite nice.
But that nice house now, 2,000 years in the future.
Well, everything's getting better, Lloyd. It's not getting worse.
No one looking after it.
Everything's getting better. Everyone's getting to be really rich. And have lovely places. But
that's not what people thought would happen, though, is it?
They clearly didn't. I wish he was here now and say, look what's happened. I'm not saying that they spread the wealth around evenly, but it's all rather lovely.
Okay, well, look, let's talk about nuclear dread while we're here,
all right,
in front of a ruin. Yes. So he started writing this book in 1974.
Yes.
8 years before that, the BBC made a film, a docudrama in black and white called The War Game.
So what year is that, you'll say?
1966.
Okay.
It was written and directed by Peter Watkins, and it's about the aftermath of a nuclear attack on Kent.
Ha ha!
Right? So, okay. But in North Kent, Rochester, Gillingham, along the coast there, but Tunbridge as well. And it was so awful, it was so grim, the BBC refused to show it.
Wow.
They took a look at it and they went, we can't show this. This is just going to send everyone into suicide. I have watched it. It is absolutely terrifying. Right. It's as scary as Threads. You can find it online.
Right.
It's only 50 minutes long. But here's the thing, right? It was never shown in the UK until the 1980s.
Yeah, okay.
But it won the Academy Award for Best Documentary
in
1966. So it was shown in America.
I like it. Thinking.
So, you know, so okay. That whole... And there's a line in it that talks about everything that's shown in this film is increasingly likely to happen by 1980.
I saw one of the little boys in the compound here yesterday. He was bouncing around, playing hopscotch, I think, and suddenly he sat down, as though he were very tired. And his face went listless, like that of an old man.
These children are orphans of the attack. They were each asked what they now wanted to grow up to be.
I don't want to be nothing. Neither do I want to be nothing. Neither do I want to be nothing.
On almost the entire subject of thermonuclear weapons, on the problems of their possession, on the effects of their use, there is now practically a total silence in the press, in official publications, and on television.
Okay, so we've made it to Folkestone. Listener and Ridley, they find the power station, which is the place where all the machines are.
The power place, filled full of shining machines, unused machines.
Unused machines. We don't really know what that is.
I've got some theories on that, but I'll share those with those later.
But after that, they say, following the black leader, we'd gone down some steps into a tunnel, and you could hear the sea stronger. We'd come out into the open night, and the little girls on our faces, again the sea, were beating loud on the stones. It were by water, right enough. Where we come out then, it was somewhere along the snug. I think it were just inshore of the lighthouse stump. So... we have found parade steps.
I can see the sea.
Which fit the bill quite nicely, don't they?
I like it, yeah.
They come up from the old town in Folkestone. These steps go down.
There's about four or five sets of them, aren't they?
It's quite steep. Quite a long way down.
Folkestone. With a house called Shangri-La right at the top.
Yes.
So a nice little notice sign there saying that people suspected that German spies lived there during World War One.
Yes.
Were sending signals across the water.
Yeah.
Purely because they felt... did they think there was some kind of German...
the German consulate.
Yeah, well, they felt that one
this
of the animal
is believed by
carvings.
Some that the building was a German consulate used by spies during World War One to send signals to enemy ships. One of the reasons put forward in support was that a German eagle can be seen under the upper windows. It is, in fact, a griffin.
Okay, so that tells you quite a lot about the people of Folkestone, doesn't it?
Well, the people of Britain, to be fair. Well, we are on panic buying fuel day.
Oh,
all the petrol
God.
Stations are empty.
Yes, the apocalypse is upon us.
So, panic.
The oil is running out. The food is running out.
English people are known to panic.
You don't need a nuclear explosion.
We have to do it to ourselves.
Okay? We just need to put Boris Johnson in charge, and it all happens naturally.
Somebody just puts a tweet out saying, my petrol's run out. My petrol? My gas station's run out of petrol.
And that's the end of it. Civilization.
It's the end of civilization. So we're walking down the steps now. And there's the sea.
So it is quite a drop, isn't it, down to the beach?
Yeah, yeah.
That's quite... So that's
Yeah, that's a thing.
So we're now down. We're down at the harbour level now.
So I have a few things to say about the power place.
So this is the place they go to before they get to the harbour.
Well, when he walks into, when they're about 6 faggers out of Folkestone.
Yeah.
And then they approach into it. Then they go down into this, what they call a power place, because they feel it has power there.
Yeah.
And in fact, they go there twice, don't they, in the book? Because the second time is where...
The second time's the bad one.
The bad scene.
Yeah.
So it's quite a significant location.
Yeah.
But obviously it's not there, and there's never been there.
But he's been asked about it explicitly, didn't he? He said, I completely made it up.
Where did you find that?
It was on the Russell Hoban site.
Okay.
Because there used to be an old Yahoo group called The Kraken, where people gathered to talk about Russell Hoban and Ridley Walker.
Wow.
And one day he showed up.
Oh, really?
Started answering questions.
Do you think it was him, or do you think it's someone just...
Well, I do wonder whether it was just some kind of magnificent troll.
You'd hope so, wouldn't you?
Yeah.
I would do that.
Yeah.
I would definitely do that. So this is the old
railway line. Bridge, yeah.
So it goes across the harbour.
Straight into the harbour.
And then the station sits right on the top.
Yeah.
Right, okay. Anyway, the power...
from up there.
Okay. The power place.
Yeah.
So, okay, he's made it up. But there are some things on the way into Folkestone that he could be imagining.
Right.
One of them is that there was a really massive railway siding. So I think in further back up there, most of that bit in there was a railway siding full of carriages and trains.
Oh, okay.
But it's a bit too near the harbour.
Yeah,
I think
you wouldn't go past it. Well, also the steps to the other side.
My second observation, however, yeah, is, you know, he said he's been going around in a camper van with his family, forcing them to go on these terrible outings for his novel research.
Right.
Can you imagine how awful that would be,
yeah,
if you were his child?
Yeah.
Well, I'm sure they enjoyed it, whatever. Yeah. I would be sulking in the back.
Yeah.
I'm wondering where he got his camper van from.
Okay, I see where you're going. I see where you're going with this.
Where am I going?
A Dormobile showroom somewhere?
Not a Dormobile showroom, mate. The Dormobile factory.
Oh, really?
A massive one.
On the outskirts of Folkestone?
Yeah, look, I've got it here, the history of it. Martin Walter.
Okay.
So a big manufacturer called Martin Fulf. So look at this. Bedford Dormobiles in 57.
Yeah.
Volkswagen Dormobiles.
Yeah.
61. Land Rover Dormobiles, 69. And here, the Folkestone factory. So it closes in 94, but it's really huge.
That is that interesting, isn't it?
Right. It was so big it had to move to a bigger site. So what I'm saying to you is that, you know, he may have been imagining while sitting in his little Dormobile, driving his Dormobile around.
Yeah, yeah.
Imagine if he was in an underground site full of shiny Dormobiles that had been lying dormant for for thousands of years.
You'll hear my theory.
Yeah, go on then. So, you don't like mine?
Yeah, no, it's quite good. It's quite good. It's quite good. I'll give you it. It's pretty good. So, there's lots of references to the A20 in this book.
True.
But there's no references to the M20.
Well, there's a reason for that.
So the M20, this part of the M20...
We're going to get a bit of footy noise here.
...opened in 1981, right?
81?
When the book, just a year after the book came out.
Okay.
But they've been building it for years. Right?
Yes.
So what do you need when you're building motorways?
Ooh, lots of diggers.
A lot of plant. Where do you keep your plant?
Oh, in an underground lair.
Yeah. But it wouldn't have been underground then, would it?
Ah, but he would have seen a big collection of stuff.
Exactly. And that would have been on the outskirts of Folkestone.
Good. I've got another one for you then.
Okay, go on, that's good.
Well, of course, then we can talk about the Channel Tunnel. That they were started to build that in the 70s and then it got abandoned.
Oh, did they?
Yeah.
Because
basically the British, the Labour government withdrew from the agreed plan.
Oh, I didn't know that.
And the big tunnel drill that was down there was left down there.
Just left down there in the tunnel.
Ready to be reactivated.
Okay, that's quite good.
That's quite good, isn't it?
All right. Well, we've got three good options.
We've got three good options. I think also that he could have just been thinking about the he got the imagination that he's that business about him saying, you know, where does the story come? It's not happened yet. It might happen.
You've got to be comfortable where your head goes.
Where the place, it's a place. Yeah. You know, the place is going to give you a story that might have been or might yet to be.
Yeah.
So he might just have been looking at the whole of that Ashford shuttle development.
Yeah.
And he imagined it before it existed.
Yeah.
And that's what he goes down into, is the whole of the Channel Tunnel railway site.
Imagined it into existence.
And imagined it into existence. It's the power place.
Yeah, yeah.
It's about the right location.
No, it's good. It's good.
Huh?
It's good.
So I think all of those things are quite good.
Yeah, yeah. I think the Dormobile one's the best, though.
If I was making the movie, I'd definitely make it.
So they go in through the post-apocalyptic landscape. They enter a massive space, and it's full of Dormobiles.
Yeah. Actually, this is a tip for when Punch Drunk inevitably do their Ridley Walker immersive theatre experience. That's a given.
That's a given.
That's a massive given. That's
where we're going.
That's one you've got for free from me.
So that was Ridley Walker by Russell Hoban.
Yes.
At this point, we like to award two scores to the books we've been covering.
The Q-Spec rating.
The CU-Spec, Q-Spec.
Specific.
An artistic merit rating.
Yes.
And a Q-Spec rating, which is how curiously specific it was or it wasn't. So artistic rating first. I would say this book is unimprovable. Right.
Ooh.
No, I do. I really think it is. Anthony Burgess said, you know, this is what literature is for, or something, didn't I, about this book.
Yeah, that's Anthony Burgess.
I know.
Come on now.
But I think I think you have to give it a 9.5.
Oh, we're doing halves now.
Well, I have to because I went so high.
That's ridiculous.
We'll probably be doing quarters.
Oh, come on.
I'll go 10.
You know you're going to end up with sort of ice skating 9.75 or diving scores, aren't you?
Yeah, exactly. So I'm going for a 9.5 for artistic merit because I think it's a work of absolute genius.
Do really you? Do.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Gosh.
What were you giving it?
Do you know what? I think the first time I read it, I probably would go with you, but I've now read it three times.
Yeah, I read it three times.
Have you?
Yes, I have, yeah.
Okay. It went slightly down in my estimation in terms of its artistic merit, but I still love it.
Yeah.
So I'm going to go 8.
Okay. I'll tell you what I think about it is looking, sort of flicking through it, as you do when we're doing this podcast, you can pick any page and there'll be something on that page that is just amazing.
Yes.
I mean, some of the phrasing is just, it's poetry. It's amazing.
Yeah. I mean, if you want to be a literary writer,
yeah,
it's a book you've got to read to understand
what it's like.
You know, what the challenge is and where the bar is, I'd say.
Where the bar is. If you want to be a literary writer, you're going to need where the bar, know where the bar is. So, curiously specific rating.
Mm.
So this is our rating for, you know, how specific the book is about dates and locations.
This is a bit rough because obviously dates-wise, we don't really know.
Yeah.
Although he's very specific about the 9 days. I think that in terms of
the time frame works.
The time frame is good.
With the
exception
of distances.
Of how far things are travelled in.
Yeah. So there's been a degree of care over the planning of the story and the structure of it.
Yeah.
So I think I'd probably go for an 8 here.
God, you're very generous with your marks, aren't you? You're just a big softy.
Well, I don't, you know.
Well, I'm going to go, since we're allowed halves, I'm going 6.5.
Oh, okay.
6.5, because I think that the whole business of how fast people travel between stuff that's big with me.
It's fundamental.
It's fundamental about if I want to reenact this book use only the book as my guide to travel around it, which is my basic principle for this whole project.
Undertaking.
Then I couldn't really do it. And therefore, you get quite a few marks off for that.
Okay, fair enough. Well, not really, a bit harsh, but anyway. So that was Ridley Walker by Russell Hoban, which was a great adventure. Really enjoyed that.
I came to love Kent.
You came to love Kent.
Okay. I've said that several times.
Yeah, I guess I'm still mildly ambivalent about Kent, but I do love your Norfolk accent.
And I love your swazzle.
We would like to thank some people at this stage. We always
one particular individual, I feel.
So we particularly like to thank Veland Hoban, Russell Hoban's son, who composed that extraordinary piece of music that we've been using throughout the podcast. The music is called Razor's Edge, and it was performed by Nico Cook on fretless electric guitar, and the Interface Ensemble conducted by Maurice Donnet-Monet. I think that
sounds a bit French.
Probably not pronouncing that properly. If you want to check out more of Veland's music, just search for Veland Hoban, W-I-E-L-A-N-D Hoban, on soundcloud.com. There's some really extraordinary stuff up there.
Great to have a connection.
Oh, amazing, yeah.
He's a connection man.
And oddly right for this book, I think, that music.
I think it actually went very well with the text. Yeah, it did. I suppose that's not very surprising in a way, since the book is dedicated to him.
Yeah, it is.
We need to thank another musician, the artist Learning Music on the Free Music Archive, because our little theme tune, our loop that we use, is composed and I suspect performed by the artist Learning Music. And it's available under a Creative Commons license on the Free Music Archive.
Thanks to both those musicians and composers. And we'll see you very shortly with a new episode of the Curiously Specific Book Club. If you liked this episode, please feel free to like and subscribe us on whatever podcast platform of choice you have. If you want to get access to the new episode straight away, check out our Patreon account.
Yes, and we're also available to you on social media. We have a Twitter account, Curiously Spec.
Curiously Spec, yeah.
We have an Instagram account, so there are a few pictures and little short videos up there to give you a sense of place.
And Stig of the Dump fame, who runs our marketing, insists that we have a Facebook page as well. But
Which I've never seen, have you?
I don't know.
I'm assuming it just automates. You just post stuff on Instagram and then it appears on the page. Does he do anything else?
Could have all sorts of Stone Age stuff on there.
We could have thousands of followers up there.
We'll never know. So if you want to follow us on Facebook, feel free.
Come
to Patreon. Pay us some money. Get some good stuff. And we'll see you very soon with a new episode of Curiously Specific. Thanks for listening.
Hey, it's Danny Pellegrino from Everything Iconic. Ready to upgrade your style game without blowing your budget? Check out Quince. They've got all the good stuff, shirts and polos, activewear and fine leather goods, all at 50 to 80% less than other high-end brands. And the best part? They're all about safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. Get that luxury vibe without the luxury price tag. Hit up quince.com/upgrade for free shipping and 365-day returns on your next order. That's quince.com/upgrade.
Hi, I'm Daniel, founder of Pretty Litter. Cats and cat owners deserve better than any old-fashioned litter. That's why I teamed up with scientists and veterinarians to create Pretty Litter. Its innovative crystal formula has superior odor control and weighs up to 80% less than clay litter. Pretty Litter even monitors health by changing colors to help detect early signs of potential illness. It's the world's smartest kitty litter.
Go to prettylitter.com and use code ACAST for 20% off your first order and a free cat toy. Terms and conditions apply. See site for details.
Hey, everyone. Craig Robinson here. I want you to check out the Ways to Win podcast, brought to you by Ford and the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. On Ways to Win, Coach Cal and I will discuss leadership lessons we've learned. We know all about the days spent perfecting your craft outside of the limelight and have knowledge to share about how strength, inspiration, encouragement, and adaptability are the key ingredients to drive toward your dreams. And those same ingredients can be found in the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. So check out my podcast, Ways to Win, and also check out the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. Learn more at Ford.com. Built Ford tough, built Ford proud.